things get a little bit grim. But this is especially heinous.
Did you tell the police that she was murdered, May?
Nope.
Witchy ghost stuff.
Ah! That made me scared.
A spooky girl amateur hour.
Yeah, it did. But it did not happen that way, so.
Good. Woo-hoo! Stress for nothing. It was rehearsal stress.
Rehearsal stress? I don't need that.
No, Kevin keeps reminding me to not rehearsal stress about things that have not happened.
I'm not convinced that I know that Kevin knows how to stress.
I am also not convinced that Kevin knows how. Listen, I have told that man some pretty like off the wall whack shit, and I have only flustered him like maybe once since I was 13.
Keep going. Someday it'll happen.
One day there will be a bigger redder flag. And I will alarm my therapist.
Oh my gosh. My therapist, Lisa, today, we sat down and she's like, I'm going to take off my shoes. I'm going to be Kevin today.
Oh! Yeah, his feet are out. Them little Argyle socks he always has on. And they always match.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He's so extra.
And then she's like putting on her shoes and she's like, I should just walk around here in my socks like Kevin.
Yeah.
I was like, I mean, he probably wouldn't care.
He might come out and get me in his socks. Does he put his shoes on to come get me in the waiting room?
Probably not.
I don't think he does.
I mean, when you own your own.
You can do whatever you want.
You can do whatever the fuck you want.
To be fair, when I was in an office, I never wore shoes. I walked around that place barefoot all the time.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
Well, anyway.
I've had residents yell at me and be like, I need to go put my shoes on for this. I'm not going to be down here 5'4 while you're up there yelling at me. Let me go put on my heels.
Yeah.
You yell at me in my eyes.
I just feel like it's I feel too vulnerable without shoes on.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I always feel very grounded.
No, I feel very naked.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I generally always have my feet just out. Always.
Weird.
I almost did not wear shoes to your home, but it was raining and there's the biggest wolf spider dead in my driveway right now. And I don't know what happened to him. He is stuck to the pavement. It has rained. He's been there for like a week and a half.
Wait, is he the one that you got with bleach? Maybe he's like bleached himself and
melted. But that was like weeks ago. But then he just showed up in my driveway dead.
Yeah.
So one of us had to run over him. That's the only possible way he could have been taken out.
Like a rodent.
Yes. Damn. It felt like I hit a raccoon and I was like, what was that?
Were you the... No, I think Allie hit a raccoon once and it fucked up her car.
That was me.
Was it you?
Oh, yeah. That was my Ford Fusion. That raccoon was the size of a goddamn Labrador Retriever and it...
Labrador Retriever?
It ripped the bumper off my car. And it was... I was in downtown Fort Wayne and I was right by the Burger King and I knew that raccoon was eaten good.
Oh, yeah. Resident Burger King.
Oh,
raccoon.
Yeah. Just... condo in the dumpster.
Absolutely.
Snacking on onion rings.
Going ham.
$1,500 worth of damage to my car.
God.
$1,500.
Woof.
Yep. I almost had a salvage title after that fucking raccoon.
I cannot. I was driving once with Allie, and Allie was like driving behind me. We were in separate cars.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a raccoon or a possum or something, and mm-hmm. It crossed the road in front of me, and I texted her, called Allie, and I was like, watch out for the R-U-O-S's.
Rodents of unusual size.
And she was like, what? And she goes, fuck! And I knew that in that moment she saw it. I was like,
fuck! Big.
Big boy.
Listen, these Indiana woodland critters are no joke.
No.
They're like,
we like fast food too much.
Yes. They won't hurt you.
No.
They'll just cause property damage.
Absolutely.
So.
And scare the shit out of you, probably.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, welcome to A Grab Bag. This is an episode that we tell you little mini bite-sized stories that are not big enough for a regular episode.
Yeah. That's what this is.
It feels like it's been so long since we've done one. Because we did October's
live.
Which you can watch on the Instagram if you want to.
Yeah.
But welcome to November.
Hi.
It's Jenny's birthday month.
Oh, it is. How exciting.
Oh, my gosh. You're going to be 31.
Whoa.
Old.
Oh, my God.
All right. Who's going first?
Well, it's rock, paper, scissors.
All right.
Rock, paper, scissors, shoot.
Bonk. Jenny wins with a rock.
Got you with a rock.
heckin.
I am in the wrong inbox. Here we go. Okay. Ooh, this, okay. So this is...
You said that like you didn't just write this 12.
I mean, I did, but a lot of things have happened in the past 6 hours since I wrote this.
Okay.
Okay, this is The Night Witches.
Oh.
This is a Vanity Fair article by Eric Grundhauser.
Okay.
In Nazi... This is so cool. And it's badass, but not in the way that you're anticipating it to be badass.
Okay.
In Nazi-occupied Soviet Union, German soldiers had a very real fear of witches, namely the Night Witches. An all-female squadron of bomber pilots who ran thousands of daring bombing raids with little more than wooden planes in the cover of night and should be as celebrated as their male counterparts. In October of 1941, the order came down from Joseph Stalin that Raskova was to establish a trio of all-female air squads. The only one reported to have remained exclusively female was the team of night bombers, the 588th Night Bomber Regiment, where everyone from the pilots to the commanders to the mechanics were women.
What?
Woof. The regiment began filling out in 1942 with young women ranging in age from 17 to 26, transferring to the small town of Ingalls to begin flight training. The future pilots were greeted by Raskova herself with a no-nonsense military manner. The women were issued size 42 boots, outfitted with ill-fitting military uniforms made for bulkier male soldiers, and their hair was cut short.
Okay.
The women faced significant obstacles even before they began engaging in combat, namely with the equipment. They had to fly two Polikarpov PO-2 aircrafts, which were two-seated open cockpit biplanes that were obsolete even by the standards of the day.
That's terrifying.
Yes. Flying some, like, 1920-ass wooden rickety plane. Made of plywood frames with canvas stretched over them, the craft were light, slow, and provided absolutely no armor. The benefit of the planes was that they had a slower stall speed than the standard German fighters, making them hard to target, and they could take off and land just about anywhere. However, this came as literal cold comfort to the aviators, who had to fly the ships through walls of enemy fire in the dead of night with freezing wind whipping around and through the exposed cockpits, often giving the pilots frostbite.
Yikes.
This did little to discourage the women of the 588th. Starting with an initial bombing run on June 8th, 1942, the all-female squadron would harry Nazi forces with overnight bombing runs all the way until the end of the war.
Oh my God.
At the peak of the regiment's strengths, it had as many as 42-person crews flying multiple bombing runs as soon as the sky darkened, taking part in as many as 18 bombings in a single night.
Wow.
The light planes could carry only 6 bombs at a time, so as soon as one run was complete, the pilots would rearm and be sent back out for, like, another run. Of course, this tightly controlled weight limit also meant the women could not bring parachutes and also had to fly at lower, more easily spotted altitudes. Using such vulnerable craft to make their bombing runs, the cover of night was crucial to their success and survival. 3 planes would leave simultaneously, with 2 of the airplanes drawing searchlights and gunfire, and the 3rd sticking to the darkness to drop the bombs. In order to remain hidden, the pilots would also kill their enemies when they got near their target and simply glide over it, deploying their payload. They would then have to climb out onto the wing, restart the engine, and fly off.
No.
I swear. As the silence bomber sailed over the Nazi forces, making a light whooshing sound, German soldiers often began referring to them as the Nachthexen or the Night Witches, a name the pilots quickly took on with pride.
They were like, yes.
Yes, sir. Us. Rumors began to spread among the Germans that the Soviets were giving the women pills and treatments that gave them the night vision of a cat.
Ooh.
One of the most famous of the Night Witches, Nadhelsta Popova, who herself flew 852 missions, earning her multiple medals and the title of Hero of the Soviet Union, described the situation a bit more accurately in Albert Axel's book, The Greatest Russian War Stories, saying, "This was nonsense, of course. What we did have were clever, educated, and very talented women."
Yes.
Yes, ma'am. And that is the story of the Night Bombers.
Wow.
Is that cool?
Fun.
I know.
Cool.
I like it a lot.
I like it too. All right. I have a haunted apartment story.
Ooh.
For you from Reddit.
Okay.
So I found this thread under a question that asked, what is the spookiest true thing that has ever happened to you?
Ooh.
Yikes. All right, so this user said, I lived in an old apartment in 2002. This place was built in 1900, so it was just over 100 years old when I moved in. The living room and kitchen were fine, but the bathroom and bedroom were unnerving, just like I had just always felt like I was being watched, yeah. Especially in the bedroom if the closet door was open. These unnerving feelings just became more moderately uncomfortable as I settled in. I felt safe in the bedroom, but only if the door was locked. One night, I was dead asleep, and there was a loud bang on my bedroom door. When I got up the courage to get out of bed, I checked the apartment, and all the windows were closed and locked from the inside, and the door still had the chain secured. No one was there. I mentioned the closet in the bedroom. I never liked going in there, and I never liked it if the door was open. For some reason, in my head, I could hear gasping noises, so for that reason, the closet stayed closed.
Uh-huh.
A month or more after I was woken by the bang on the door, I was dead asleep, but something woke me up, and it was a pressure on me, like being held down. It was pitch black in my room, and I couldn't see anything, but I knew someone was standing over me. When I could finally turn on the bedside lamp, no one was there. Then, after I couldn't sleep in the dark, I had to sleep with the light on. The incident scared the life out of me, and after the unnerving feeling of being watched intensified. Friends would come over and comment about being uncomfortable in the bathroom, like being watched. It became so uncomfortable for me when I had the chance to move to another unit, I jumped at it. I packed up and got out.
Mm.
After me, several people rented the apartment, and they would move out within months. I became friendly with the building manager and told him that I felt the place was haunted, and he kind of just laughed it off. Years after, when they were renovating the place, the building manager was doing some painting in there. The building owner was in there too. I went in and checked out the apartment and it looked nicer and it didn't feel as creepy. I got to talking with the building owner, and through the course of the conversation, he just throws it out there that a former tenant had committed suicide in the closet by hanging themselves. I know. He also mentioned that the original designer of the building lived in that apartment and died in there.
Oh my god.
I wasn't mad when I found out, but I did feel validated that what I experienced was real.
Yeah.
I would be mad.
I would just be relieved that I was no longer there.
Yeah, yeah. Icky.
Ew. Yuck. So ew.
Yuck.
Okay, so weirdly enough, I also was on that Reddit thread.
Were you?
Same one.
Nice.
Same Reddit thread. This one, a lot of similarities here.
Okay.
This one is from the user Mom Says I'm Pretty.
Okay.
I was about 4 or 5 years old and my parents had just separated. My mom was living in a 2-bedroom apartment and I had my own room, but I preferred to sleep in her bed whenever I was staying with her. Our 2 bedrooms were at the end of a hallway directly across from each other. Our apartment was on the 1st floor, and I remember that it was in the middle of the summer and my mom had a window open in her room, which is directly behind the bed above the headboard.
Okay.
Anyways, I woke up in the middle of the night and I remember sitting up and seeing that our cat was sitting in the door frame of my mom's room. Her door was open and you could partially see into my bedroom. This was strange because our cat was typically always in bed with us. As I watched him, he walked into my bedroom and meowed.
Mm-hmm.
I turned to face my mom and wake her up. In the 3 to 4 seconds it took to wake her up and ask me what was wrong, we both looked back at the door frame and there was a man standing by my open door making his way out of my bedroom.
Nope, nope, nope. Mm-mm.
I still don't know how she managed to do it so quickly, but my mother proceeded to pick me up and literally throw me out of the screen window. Again, we were on the 1st floor and it was maybe a 3-foot drop to the ground.
Thank God.
She quickly followed and we were able to start screaming for help and someone called 911. The police came but didn't see any signs of forced entry, only that our front door was unlocked, which led them to believe the man must have exited that way. The strange thing was that my mom swore up and down that she'd locked the door that night with the deadbolt and chain lock. About a week later, she was cleaning the kitchen and opened up our water heater closet and found a notebook with names and drawings, as well as a pair of gloves and some gum wrappers.
No!
The police were called again, but all they could do was speculate that the man had been in our house and hid until we were asleep.
So horrible. Ooh, I hate those. I hate those stories.
It's awful.
Like the people in the attics.
Oh,
like,
I can't. I can't. Living in the walls.
Especially when there's video of like them crawling down.
Did you see the one with the lady who was like making a PB&J?
Yes.
Yeah. That gives me so many fucking heebs. I
I can't. It makes me mind boggled.
Yeah.
What? All right. So, next up, if I can get my dangle iPad to unlock. Okay. I have a story written from NPR, or a story from NPR written by Bill Chappell.
Sprinklegate?
No.
Oh.
I almost did that one.
That's my next one.
Oh, okay. We were...
What is happening?
Very same things today.
Oh my. It's also a Bill Chappell NPR really? Article. Yes, mine? Yes.
Oh, I read that one.
Oh, yes, same author.
Bill, our dude.
Okay, go on.
Okay. A man fired a crossbow from a balcony into the street in the Netherlands on Friday, on a Friday in September, in a dangerous and confusing event in which two people died and another victim was injured, police say.
What?
Yeah, the suspect is now in custody and he was also injured. Police were initially called to the apartment building in the city of Almelo for a reported stabbing incident Friday morning. The two people who died were found inside the building, local media outlet RTV Oost reports.
Oost.
Police have released few details about what happened, saying their investigation is ongoing, but it seems clear that the situation escalated rapidly as a call for a stabbing turned into a brief standoff with police involving a crossbow.
What?
As officers converged on the apartment building, they were confronted by a shirtless man wielding a crossbow. He fired the weapon at bystanders and officers, returned fire with their guns, according to the Dutch National Police.
Buns Trump crossbow.
What?
Guns Trump's crossbow.
Yeah. A video from the scene shows the man seemingly firing at least one arrow from the balcony. In the brief footage, at least one gunshot also rings out. The East Netherlands police unit in Overijssel province said officers had been forced to use their weapons. Photos show that police tactical units were among those responding and officers that had pointed rifles with telescopic sights at the building. Almelo Mayor Arjen Gerritsen said on Twitter that he is shocked and upset by the crime, which he said had great impact on the neighborhood. More information will be released when possible, he added. Police have not publicly identified anyone involved in the case, other than to say that the suspect who was arrested is a 28-year-old man who lives in the city. It is not clear what relationship the crossbow-wielding man might have had to the people who died.
Oh.
So, he just had two people.
He just was out there shooting.
Yeah. Wow. With a crossbow.
Okay.
No shirt, crossbow.
Is he on PCP? Like, what is...
Probably.
What is happening?
Just a wild story about how you can't go out in public.
I love that.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you. Mine is also an article on NPR.
From Bill!
From Bill! Bill Chappell!
Bill, our man!
This is great. This is Sprinklegate. Sprinklegate. a British bakery has been forced to pull its top-selling cookies from the market after regulators informed the owner that the sprinkles are illegal. The U.S.-made sprinkles contain a coloring that's legal for some uses, but not for sprinkling. Rich Myers, owner of the Get Baked Bakery in Leeds, disclosed the recent setback on Facebook, where his updates on what he calls Sprinklegate have been defined by frank talk and occasional heartfelt profanity.
Oh my god.
He says that the decision is a huge deal for his business and also, quote, very fucking annoying.
Very fucking annoying.
Consumers often ask for raspberry glaze, donut cookies, or a birthday Bruce, a towering slab of 12-layer chocolate cake. Both of them prominently feature the outlawed sprinkles. The donut cookies, Myers added, are not only our best-selling cookie, they're utterly sensational. But for now, they're off their menu. It is highly unlikely that we will find any legal sprinkles that we will use as a replacement, he wrote. British sprinkles just aren't the same. They're totally shit and I hate them.
Oh my god, I love him.
He added, I am extremely passionate about sprinkles.
I see that.
We got it. Any drop in sales of the Bruce could also hurt Myers' bottom line. With or without sprinkles, each slice goes for £10, around $13.75.
Wow.
Myers says Get Baked got the sprinkles from a wholesaler that imports them from the U.S., but the West Yorkshire Trading Standards Agency deemed them illegal because they contain a coloring called urethrozine. In the U.S., it's labeled as FD&C Red Number 3.
Okay.
So the Food and Drug Administration restricted uses in 1990, citing studies showing that in high doses, the additive was found to cause cancer in lab tests on animals. The dye is currently allowed in the U.S. in foods, but the Center for Science and the Public Interest has urged the FDA to revoke its approval. The BBC reports it's also been linked to hyperactivity in children. So on October 1st, a government inspector was sent round to get Baked, acting on a tip that flummoxed Myers. An informer had apparently raised the alarm about the forbidden sprinkles. At the time, the baker believed that only his sprinkles were better. He wasn't aware they also broke the law.
Woof.
I realize how insane this is, he wrote a few days after the visit. Unfortunately, I'm only prepared to use them and no others. If I can't use them, I won't use any. I will be on sprinkle strike.
Sprinkle strike. You know that if they were just like discontinued, he would be like, oh, fuck, man, I guess I gotta get new sprinkles. But no, because they're illegal.
They're illegal.
He's like, ah!
No sprinkles.
Sprinkles.
I shall have no other. The initial contact was followed by hopes of a reprieve as the taboo topping was taken away for testing. But the verdict that came back this week confirmed that the brightly colored sprinkles are indeed banned in the UK. We stand by all advice given and would urge all food business operators when seeking to use imported foods containing additives to check that they are permitted for use in the UK. West Yorkshire Trading Standard said this week as thousands of tweets took up the saga of Sprinklegate. He's winning both praise for his mouth-watering treats and his online narration over the saga Sprinkle saga.
They're shit. I hate them.
I hate them. They're shit. The intense interest has brought a rush of business and support for Get Baked, but has also distracted Myers and his team as journalists descended upon his shop. He delayed opening Thursday so he could catch up on baking, but he pledged to fulfill all advance orders. The bakery also recently won praise for waiving delivery fees for all orders to two local hospitals.
Oh, cute.
Whether they were for staff, parents, or families. Quote, to whoever, to whoever reported us to Trading Standards, Meyer wrote on Facebook, all I have to say is, dear Lord, what a sad little life, Jane.
Is that their version of Karen?
I don't know.
I love it.
You like that?
Yeah.
This is a good one.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Give me yours.
All right. This one made my insides itchy.
Oh no.
It made my inside itchy and squirmy, and so now if I have to know about it, so do you.
I hate this rule.
There are an estimated 350 shipwrecks in Lake Superior, and an estimated 10,000 people have died in the icy waters, but as legend says, Lake Superior never gives up her dead. Have you heard this?
No.
Okay. Underwater bacteria feed on human remains and create gas, which causes bodies to float to the surface.
What?
The average temperature of Lake Superior is 36 degrees, which is cold enough to inhibit bacterial growth and prevent bodies from rising.
So
they just stay down there intact.
What? Like they don't decompose?
No.
What?
There are just bodies.
It's giving very Everest.
Floating down in these shipwrecks.
What?
Yeah.
In the fuck?
What? There's video.
No, why?
Because people go down there, they like scuba dive and they swim.
In the dead bodies?
In the dead body shipwrecks.
What?
Okay, I just want to barf about it. In the case of the Edmund Fitzgerald bodies, they all went down with the ship and never came back up. The Fitzgerald was an ore carrier that went down with all 29 hands in a 1975 storm. During a 1994 expedition to the wreck, divers finally found the body of a crew member for the first time. Video footage shows the remains outside of the wreck near the bow, fully clothed, wearing an orange life jacket, and lying face down in the sediment.
Mm.
They left the remains undisturbed, and you can watch the video. Although I highly discourage you from doing this activity, because it's fucking creepy.
Do you see the dead bodies?
Yes, it's very, like, the blurry. Footage is blurry.
Okay.
Like
they filmed it on a toaster?
Yeah.
No one ever has a GoPro down there?
No. I had to watch it because the curiosity was gonna kill me.
Sure.
But also watching this killed me.
Okay.
Either way.
There was no knowing peace.
No. The descent from the surface to one of Superior's wreck is a trip to the past to the day the ship went down. You swim to the stateroom of a 70-year-old shipwreck and see the shoes under the bunks. It's really easy to locate, or really easy to relate to the panic of sinking, says Daniel Linehan, an underwater archaeologist for the National Park Service. He likens the lake's depths to the waterlogged deep freeze.
Gross.
So that's my fun fact of the day, is that bodies just stay down there.
I hate that. So much. So one of us has to cover Everest because they do. Oh, they use the bodies as like land.
Markers.
Yes.
Markers. I told Jamie this entire story because we rode the Everest ride at Disney World.
Yeah. Okay.
I was like, so did you know this thing about Everest? They just leave the bodies.
They have
there.
Like Rainbow Valley where they have just like, oh God.
Ugh. Yeah. So many bodies on Everest.
I know. We'll cover, one of us will cover it. Listen, I have a bonus.
Oh, do you?
Yes, but it's a survival tip.
Okay.
Okay. I read this on the internet and it's really smart and I never thought of it, but it could like probably save your life sometime. So if you ever get lost while like hiking or you're stranded or your car broke down and you have no signal or like your low battery is happening.
Yeah.
Open up your voicemail settings and change your message. So give the approximate time, date, location, explain the situation like, it's 8:15 on Monday, October 25th. I hit a deer. I have a bump on my head. My phone's on 3%. And like give any specific details or instructions.
Like where you are, what you're going to do.
Yeah, I'm staying with my car. I'm walking west down Main Street. I'm wearing jeans and a red hoodie. I have my wallet. I don't, whatever. So even if your phone dies or stops working, your voicemail message will stay the same. So anyone who calls to see where you are will hear it and be able to find you or send for help.
That's such a good idea.
I know.
Damn.
So smart, right?
That's so smart.
So, there you go.
Do you want a not as great tip, but also a good tip?
Yes.
So, if you are in the middle of, like, paying for something on your phone and you don't, like, you change your mind, or you're, like, sending a text and that, like, bar is going across, throw that phone into airplane mode.
It'll stop that.
It'll stop
it. Well, I don't know about survival, but I have saved a lot of cringy texts.
Yeah. I helped one of the people that I work with. We were thinking about doing the scooters downtown.
Oh, fun.
And she didn't realize it was $15 to do a scooter until it was like too late and she was trying to pay for it.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh no, I think I already paid for it. And I was like, airplane mode!
Did it save her?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good one.
So, all right. If you like it, you can follow us in all the places like Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. You can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser. If you have a creepy story, you can send it in at alittlebitgrim@gmail.com. And don't forget to be kind to yourself.
And to others.
Goodbye. Goodbye.